Chapter 9. Beast Herd. Faithless. Ground Assault. Herd Ship. Traitor Fleet, Terran near orbit. 25th of Secundus.
For too long you have suffered.
The Apostle's voice rang over the vox speakers, fighting with the rising bleats of the herd. Asmedi strained to listen. Comprehension was slipping away into animality. He considered the part that listened his human half. The other part, the beast part, jerked against the leashes of shame. Soon it would break free and consume his reasoning mind. But for now, he could still understand.
You have been cast out and consigned to the fringes of 10,000 worlds, fit only for the noisome places where pure bloods will not go, the Apostle said. You are the lords of ruin, for ruins are all you have ever had to call your own. The citizens of the Imperium, those upright tyrants who shun you, have another name for you, a shameful name. A name that is soaked through with their contempt.
Asmedi didn't need to hear the word. It was uttered the moment he was born to his horrified mother, and chased him out of the bright places into the haunts of freaks and criminals. There the word had been shouted again, and he had been driven further on, despised even by other creatures who bore the stigma of mutation. The word. The Apostle was going to say the word.
No! No, no!
Asmedi shouted, his speech losing its shape, becoming a warbling, caprine bleat.
Beastmen! Said the Apostle.
The hold erupted with shouts and cries. There were those who raged, but most voices cried out in despair.
They call you Beastmen!
There had been Imperial iterators, down in the deeps where Asmedi had found his own kind, who had come to teach their secular religion to every branch of mankind, no matter how devolved, in mean schools they carved out of compressed hive-bottom junk. The Apostle's words evoked those lessons 15 years ago. So long for one of his kind. The lives of the beastkin were short.
In the beginning, when man left the world you will soon conquer, he had but one form. Many places moulded the genome of our species, and one form became many.
Asmedi's breaking mind reeled with the sermon. His memories intruded into the present, words said to him, words that were more than sounds on the air, but chains to bind him. Homo sapiens variatus, the smiling man had said, as if that explained everything.
Others retain the name of human, but not you. Not you,
the Apostle railed.
Your dignity was taken from you. You were decreed as less than human. Abhuman. Mutant. Undesirables on worlds you called home for hundreds of generations. The Emperor meddles with mankind's form, and they call his monsters heroes. Yet you, the rightful children of change, are branded beasts.
There were those who tried to follow the rules. There were those who tried to understand. There were those who tried to atone for the sin of being born. It made no difference. All Asmedi's kind were hated. Though their forms were no more aberrant than other human strains, their appearance evoked folk memories of devils, and they were treated accordingly.
If a man is treated as a beast, then he becomes a beast.
The beastmen roared out their pain. They locked their horns and butted heads. The hold reeked of droppings and rage.
Beasts!
Shouted a beastman close to Asmedi.
Beasts!
Bleated another. The cries spread through the herd, until the hold shook with stamping hooves and the chant of Beasts! 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 The Apostle's sermon rose in volume to compete.
But to the Pantheon, you are holy beings. You are pure. You are children of chaos. You are the living example of mutability. Go out! Go out into the fire and cast down those enthralled to the false emperor. Trample his works beneath your feet. Wet your horns with the blood of unbelievers. Beasts! Beasts! Beasts!
The stink of aggression filled the world. As Medhi's nostrils flared to breathe it in, he resisted joining the call for violence until the very last. His senses reeling, memories of oppression crashed upon him in waves, threatening to drown his sanity in misery and injustice. He would not drown. He wanted to remain a man. He wished to stay human. He could not. His muzzle shaking, as Medhi opened his mouth and threw back his horned head.
"Beasts!"
he roared. His human mind sank into rage. There were two colours to the world, red and black. All other hues existed to be drenched in the former or cast into the latter. The first came with violence, the second with the end of life. There was nothing in between blood and death. As Medhi welcomed such oblivion, for there was no pain there. Then the clamps released the herd ship from its carrier, and the nose pitched down for the desperate rush to terror. The beastmen were already fighting each other. Loman's Promise, repurposed fleet tender, Terran near orbit, 25th of Secundus. The butt of Hannes Hofar's lasgun was made of hyperdense plastic. Scratching an octet into it was incredibly hard, and had become boring well before he had finished the initial cross of the eight-pointed star. Hannes had a reputation for doggedness to uphold, and so kept at it, dragging the sharpened end of his mess spoon back and forth, cursing when the plastic crumbled and the edges roughened. It wasn't something he enjoyed, but there was precious little else to do. He'd long since blocked out the smell and constant noise of 500 men living in close proximity. What he couldn't cope with was his tiny little sliver of private space being invaded. When the blanket that separated his cot from the next man's was tugged back, he stabbed himself with the sharpened spoon and swore colourfully. The nervy figure of Fendo stood in the gap. Behind him, the rest of the regiment, what was left of it, went about the mind-fraying tedium of shipboard life, arguing, smoking, fighting, sleeping and swearing.
"For the War Master's sake," grumbled Hannes.
He sucked at his cut hand and yanked at the curtain with the other. Fendo wouldn't let him close it.
"We're going in,"
he said. Hannes Hofar scowled at Fendo's moronic face. He was the kind of man who wore a look of slack-mouthed wonder 90% of the time. He gaped at everything, a tendency that had only got worse since he'd embraced the Eightfold Faith. It was the less intelligent ones who had done so first, and Fendo was right at the front of the queue.
"We're going in," said Hannes flatly.
Fendo nodded encouragingly. Hannes sighed. He shook his wounded hand and pressed a rag to it.
"We're not going in. Whispers promising battle have run through these barracks over and over again. We haven't gone in."
He took away the rag. Blood dripped into the unfinished octet on his gun, and he scowled.
"But we are this time, Hannes, I heard."
Fendo scratched around the octet branded onto his cheek. The flesh around it was still inflamed weeks later. It didn't seem to bother him.
"Everyone's talking about it. Everyone."
"Is this the same everyone who said so last time?"
Hannes picked up his spoon and recommenced work. The edge cut more smoothly now it was greased with blood.
"Come on, Hannes,"
Fendo implored.
"Get lost, Fendo. I'm busy."
"I see. I see."
He pointed at Hannes's work, only now noticing it.
"Oh, the masters will be pleased. You take the mark."
"Don't get excited. I'm not fool enough to do that to myself."
He jabbed the spoon at Fendo's brand, then hunched back over his weapon.
"I'm just doing this so I'm not singled out. And because I'm bored."
"It doesn't matter why you're doing it. Just that you are. The gods, Hannes, they'll watch over you, protect you. They care. The Emperor lied to us. There are gods. They want our worship. They can make you powerful."
Hannes looked past his comrade into the wider hall. Loman's promise was a fleet tender. The Thurnians had lost most of their transports 3 years ago, and since then the cargo hold had been their home.
Look at this place, Fendel. It's cramped, smoky, and always either too hot or too cold. The air is hardly breathable. We've barely enough pots to piss in and next to nothing to eat. I'd say if the gods granted wishes, none of us would be in here.
They look over me.
Hannes blew out a curl of plastic. He must be getting the hang of carving, because it was getting easier.
Fat lot of good has done you, said Hannes.
Nothing could dent Fendo's idiotic ebullience.
Well, if you believe that, why are you fighting the Emperor?
I'm fighting for the War Master, not for these so-called gods of yours.
Why? They're gods. The War Master's just a man.
Just a man? You're such an idiot.
Hannes had a flash of the one time he had stood near the War Master 10 years ago, before the Civil War. In the wake of 6310, Horus had walked among the regiment, stopping to talk with men at their fires, easy with them, sharing jokes and giving praise. Hannes had been too dumbstruck to address this giant as he strode by within touching distance. He remembered the moment as clearly as if it were happening again. The sheer presence of Horus had deformed Hannes's life, like a star's mass bends space. Everything before and after was rendered meaningless. Some of his comrades had been even more affected. A couple never recovered. Not Hannes. When Horus had gone by, he had known with absolute certainty that he would follow Horus Lupercal wherever he went and whatever he did.
He's not a man, muttered Hannes. He's much more than that.
Well then, lad,
said Fendo, his over-familiarity prompting another scowl from Hannes.
Best get ready, because you'll have the chance to prove your worth to him soon.
No. No, I won't.
The spoon sliced through the plastic. After only a couple of minutes, he suddenly had all 8 arms done. He started on the arrow tips for the ends.
There's not enough of us left. What kind of threat could the Thurnians present, huh? We've hardly got sufficient guns for every man. What are we going to do? Throw our empty ration packs at the enemy?
Hannes shook his head.
Mark my words. He'll send in his legions first. We'll be left to mop up.
I know you're wrong.
And I know you're...
A klaxon sounded twice, cutting Hannes dead. The vox crackled on.
Attention, all Thurnians, this is not a drill. Prepare for immediate combat deployment. Prepare for battle. I repeat, this is not a drill. We have the honour of securing the beachhead.
Their commanding officer's voice wavered with pride.
That was the colonel, said Hannes.
He frowned.
I thought he was dead.
Fendo nodded, his idiot's grin spreading wider.
We going in?
Throughout the bay, every man froze, looking up dumbfounded as if the gods themselves had spoken to them and would do so again.
By the Four, said Hannes.
Suddenly, all at once, the hold exploded with activity. Everybody was shouting. Everybody was moving. Tatty uniforms were thrown on. Battered flak armour shrugged over worn jackets. Guns were snatched up. Crude amulets yanked off hooks and slung about necks.
But how are they going to get us down there?
Said Hannes.
We've got no landers. This ship can't put down. Are we going to be transferred?
The ship answered his question with a shudder. The background noises of the vessel changed, the grunting whoosh of its plasma thrusters sounding loud, even over the racket of excited men. A faint push upwards told Hannes which direction they were going.
No,
he said, afraid now.
No, they're taking the tender down. It's not made for it. We'll crash. We're all going to die.
Fendo's smile turned wicked. Before that moment, Hannes had never really noticed just how ugly the man was. Traitor Fleet, Terran near orbit, 25th of Secundus. All across Horus's fleet, the landing ships departed. From the carriers and the troop transports, the hulks and the freighters, from vessels of every kind pressed into service by Horus's armada, 100,000 craft set out. Among them went vessels never intended to leave the weightlessness of the void. Sinking determinedly, they pierced the upper envelope of Terra's dirty atmosphere, bellies glowing with compressive heat, as smaller ships plummeted past in a race to the surface. They descended among a hail of mass fire and the discharge of 10,000 lances. The boiling fires around the palace were visible from Luna, while overworked void shields sparked lightning that crackled from one side of the planet to the other. Outside of the palace's protective fields, tracts of terror burned under heavy bombardment. Dust pillared the heavens. Ash flew streamers in raging stratospheric winds. Every city, every settlement was under attack. Most possessed their own defences, but none compared to those guarding the palace, and several hives already burned, as giant pyres that lit terror with a hellish glow. Debris had yet to occlude the sky completely, though it was only a matter of time before the atmosphere was choked by the ejector of so many impacts. Steam boiled from young seas. Regenerating vegetation burned. Wherever there were settlements, buildings were reduced to craters and people to ash. Nothing was spared, no matter how insignificant. In his desire to make his father suffer, Horus punished the human race. Into this maelstrom went the ships. Terra's guns gave fire as soon as Dawn judged the drop formation set. The guns of the palace targeted anything on a downwards course. Once the landers were past the protection of the larger ship's shields, they were immediately at risk. Smaller ships were atomized. Larger craft were crippled to plummet blazing through slate-grey skies. The warp around the throne world boiled with souls snatched from their mortal housings. And yet still the War Master's ships came, thundering through the air by the thousands. So many were obliterated, but the forces of Horus were so immense that each one lost was but a grain of sand removed from a desert. When the void was thick with this flotilla, and the gunners of terror spoiled for choice of target, then the hangars of the fleet opened, and uncountable fighters and bombers rushed out. Their engines burning at full capacity, they raced down between the landers as swift as arrows, each locked upon a goal, their bomb bays filled with ordnance and cannon magazines stacked with shells. Their mission was to break the teeth of the Imperial Palace.